back, WNST, Towson Baltimore and Baltimore Positive. Big thanks and appreciation to all of our Maryland Crab Cake Tour sponsors, including our friends. Restaurant Week coming up in a couple of weeks. We're going to have restaurant tours on from all over the state. My friends at Amici's are participating, so make sure you get out for Restaurant Week coming up 2 weeks from now. I am headed to Las Vegas, Nevada on Monday night. Dennis will be here on Thursday and again on Sunday. All of it brought to you by our friends at Coons Baltimore Ford, of course. And Baltimore Positive will be aglow with not just all of the remnants of the Maryland Crab Cake Tour, but tons and tons of Raiders insiders. We're going out to Vegas all week long. Rod Woodson's going to be joining us. Amy Trask is going to be here. John Zeman dropping by. JT the Brick will be here. My dear friend Julio Bermejo will be here as well. Don't forget, on Friday, we're at the Chaucer beginning at 2 p.m. The Maryland Crab Cake Tour coming home, trying the crab cake. Brian's been telling me for a year at the Chaucer, I got a great crab cake. All right. We'll find out. Friday at 2 o'clock, we'll see you at Highland Town. We'll have some game day vodka as well. Luke Jones is here to discuss all things Ravens this weekend and getting ready for Monday night. I'm going down to the Boatyard in Annapolis to participate in their maritime event. Dick Franio, we had on the program last week with the governor. They have members of Jimmy Buffett's band on Saturday, John Mayer and some others. So I'm looking forward to that. But I'm buckling my seatbelt for the whole thing here, right? Like, mask on, out to Vegas, games on Sunday, landing Sunday night, chilling Monday, going straight to the stadium, masking up, seeing a new stadium, off the strip, in come the Raiders, in come the Ravens. You have no idea what's going to happen on the offense. One thing we do know about the offense, Luke, DaCosta's opening the checkbook before the season begins. Huh? Like, as much as I get these bad news texts on the Coons Ford text service in regard to Justice Hill, Mark Andrews getting paid, maybe not a shocker, right? I mean, this is certainly, he was on the A list of guys that if they're going to keep him, they better pay him, right?
Oh, no question about it. I mean, you look at Mark Andrews and the importance that he has had for this offense. Really, I mean, he had a decent chemistry with Joe Flacco even during Andrews' rookie year. Caught a couple touchdowns with him, but that chemistry he had with Lamar Jackson from day one. Remember that such a limited passing game they had during Lamar's rookie year. It worked with Andrews, though. I mean, we all remember the big touchdown he had in that Chargers Saturday night game that kind of put them on the right side of the playoff bubble, and of course they won the division the following week, but.
Favorite all-time games in that little band.
Oh, yeah. There. I mean, Mark Andrews has come up big. And I think anyone not named George Kittle, Travis Kelce, and I think what'll be interesting is I think he's in that similar place to where Darren Waller, ironically, former Raven, what he's been able to do with the Raiders and his monster season a year ago. But these guys are really good players, and they're really important to their offense. And when you look at the Ravens, and we've talked so much about their passing game and the need to complete more passes outside the numbers, the need to play off schedule a little more effectively, all those different things. And we'll continue to talk about those. But what do we know that works really well when it comes to the passing game with Lamar Jackson? It's finding Mark Andrews over that middle third of the field. And it's been wildly successful, and chances are it's going to continue to be successful. We know from a financial standpoint, very successful for Mark Andrews as he agrees to a $56 million four-year contract extension. And we knew that this was in the works. We know that Eric DaCosta even talked early in the offseason that they had some conversations. And the difference here, as much as the focus is going to be on the quarterback for obvious reasons, but the difference is Lamar Jackson's already under contract next year, right? He already has that fifth-year option that's guaranteed. I mean, he's not going anywhere, at least through 2022. Mark Andrews is in the last year of his rookie deal. And you run that risk of waiting, and then you get to free agency, or you're using the franchise tag, and sometimes that leads to some tension and some ill will between the two sides, or at least perception of that. So why wouldn't you work this out? And I think where he slots in, you kind of look at where he fits. He's still behind George Kittle, who average annual value for him is $15 million. Travis Kelce, $14.3 million. And really, the Ravens had a decent framework. If you look at the two deals that New England gave their two tight ends, Jonnu Smith and Hunter Henry, you knew that Andrews was going to get more than those two because he's a better tight end than those two guys. And a little more, and that's not to say they're bad, but I think Mark Andrews,
a week, man, it's amazing.
Yeah,
right?
Sure. But I think it always made sense for Andrews to come in higher than those two, but a little bit under Kittle and Travis Kelce. Now, he certainly could shoot for the moon and try to and make the argument, hey, I'm younger than those guys. And you know, he could make that argument. But I think this makes sense. I think for him, it's nice. He's, you know, happy birthday to him on Monday. He gets his contract extension on his 26th birthday. But you look at how this deal plays out now, he can hit the market again at age 30. If he stays healthy, if he's productive, if he's still a, you know, at least second tier, you know, maybe not the elite, but the next tier down in terms of tight ends in this league, he's got a chance at another nice payday. So good for him. You know, he got a nice big guarantee on that deal. It makes sense. And if you're the Ravens, we've known that this was coming over the last couple of years. Last year, it was Marlon Humphrey and Ronnie Stanley. It's Mark Andrews now. We know it will be Lamar Jackson, whether it's tomorrow or whether it's next week or next offseason, he's going to get paid. And beyond that, you're kind of in wait and see mode. You know, what happens with Marquise Brown this year?
We also
what
see happens- guys that don't get paid. Orlando Brown, sure. We'll see him next week.
Oh, sure. Of course. And that's going to be part of it. When you've invested as much as they have at corner, where you're paying a guy top three in the NFL corner money, which Marlon Humphrey's that kind of player. Same with Ronnie Stanley at left tackle. You're now paying Mark Andrews to be the third highest paid tight end in the league. You know Lamar Jackson's going to be somewhere. If he's not the highest paid, he's going to be right behind Patrick Mahomes, let's say. So you have those top of the market deals at their respective positions. Then yeah, you're going to have to make some sacrifices, as you mentioned, Orlando Brown, or it might be Deshaun Elliott if he has a nice year this year. We've seen it with Matthew Judon. I mean, you're not going to be able to keep everybody, and that's just the reality when you get to this. Not just with your quarterback, obviously that's the big one, but when you have some other elite, All-Pro, Pro Bowl caliber players, which you want, you need, right? You can't just have a roster of 53 okay players. That's a recipe for what, going 9-8 now, I guess it is, at the 17 game schedule. So you need those elite talents, but you know, when you have to pay them, that's when it becomes so much more important to find first of all, stack draft picks, collect draft picks in the way they have. And we've talked about that some with roster cutdowns last week with some underwhelming picks that they were able to moves elsewhere, and they got mulligans. They got draft picks in return. So you're going to need those picks. You're going to need more rookie free agents to make your roster and maybe develop into a player for you in the way that Gus Edwards did that 3 years ago. And now he's our starting running back. You're going to have that. But when you have a player like a Mark Andrews, you want to keep him, right? I mean, the Ravens, we all think back to Shannon Sharp and then Todd Heap, of course, being a first round pick and what he meant for this organization at a time when the quarterback play left a lot to be desired.
And Dixon were,
I was just going to say, it's interesting. We always think about Hayden Hurst and Mark Andrews. I mean, the same thing happened with Ed Dixon and Dennis Pitta. I mean, Ed Dixon was the higher draft pick, but Dennis Pitta was the better player.
Daniels came in for 5 minutes too.
Sure. But I'm talking about the young guys that you want to ultimately invest in. And, Pitta was that guy. And then
it's just always been
hurt.
Such a pivotal position and a position where they've had grown ass men for the last 20 years. They've had a lot of really, it's been important. It's been treated important. It's been drafted important. It's been paid important. And it was paid important again on Sunday night, right?
Well, and you look at what they do with their offense. I mean, we know how much running they do and will continue to do, but teams want to do what then? They want to be in base. They want to be in a heavier defensive package. Well, when you have a guy like Mark Andrews who can run and maybe doesn't run like a wide receiver, but he's really fast for a tight end. And of course he's big and can make plays, jump balls and things of that nature. He's a matchup nightmare. He's that guy that, these teams that are so akin to, so used to playing nickel defense and dime defense in today's pass happy NFL, what the Ravens do offensively is just such a different animal. So yeah, They're going to send more linebackers out there. Well, those linebackers can't cover Mark Andrews. So again, it's about stress, placing stress on the defense and creating matchup nightmares. And Mark Andrews has been a matchup nightmare for opposing defenses for three, you know, going on year four now. And yeah, of course they were going to keep him around. I don't think there was ever a doubt it was going to be, whether it was going to be now, whether it was going to be at the very end of the season, or whether it was going to be a situation where, yeah, the franchise tag would have come into play. And then again, you're rolling the dice there in terms of, you know, not wanting to have an acrimonious situation where, you know, there's hurt feelings and potential holdouts and all those things. Not that I thought Andrews would have handled it that way, but you'd much rather have the long-term deal in place, knowing he's going to be a Raven now for the next 5 years, counting, you know, this year and then the 4 years after that with the extension.
You mentioned matchup problems, Luke. If the Ravens are going to have a matchup problem, if the Ravens are going to lose on Monday night, it's probably going to look like Waller, 9 catches, 183 yards, or something crazy like that. He was here for a minute, obviously, a well-told story about his personal demons and battles and getting himself together out in Oakland, now out in Las Vegas for a second year. You know, how do the Ravens lose on Monday? And, you know, JT, the Brick's coming on this week, is asking me questions. I said, look, we haven't seen their offense play. So I can say this. The one thing I feel like about Lamar, and this is 3 years into this, 4 years into this now, right, is I would say they don't turn the ball over much. You know, Lamar doesn't make bad decisions, maybe some bad plays, things happen, ball's a little long, a little short, maybe there'll be an interception, you know, but this isn't four turnovers and you get laughed out and lose 38-13. That doesn't happen to this franchise much. It doesn't happen to Lamar. It doesn't happen to John. One thing I always feel like when I get on the plane and I fly out to Las Vegas with my mask on Sunday night is that I'm going to get a credible effort on Monday night. I, you know, I feel like if they lose, Raiders are going to probably have to do something special and offensively special against this defense. Much we want to talk Lamar and Mark Andrews and all the injuries and who's on the line and Greg Roman and number eight and number five. Defensively, we haven't talked a lot about it because it's not all that sexy to win preseason games, even when you win 20 in a row, right? But the defense, in my mind, I'm getting on the plane to go out there and win. The defense will be the reason they win on Monday night.
Well, I mean, I'm not going to say the offense can't go out there and do good things. Like I said, the Raiders couldn't stop anyone last year. I mean, the defense was part of their downfall and the fact that they had a chance to make the playoffs and they didn't, because, you know, they had some losses where you just kind of look at it and you scratch your head and they couldn't stop people ultimately. But I think, yeah, you want your defense needs to go out there and play good football. And you mentioned, I mean, Darren Waller, he's the matchup problem. I mean, you look at the rest of their offense, and I know Josh Jacobs is a guy that's gotten a lot of talk and, you know, he's had success. I don't want to say he's a bad running back, but is he the kind of guy that I anticipate running all over that Ravens front? No, I don't. I think the guy that's the big question, as is the case, whoever is playing the Raiders, because of the kind of talent he is how do you match up with Darren Waller? I think, and what's interesting for the Ravens, Jimmy Smith still not practicing at the beginning of this week. At this point, considering he's missed about a month, I'm guessing he's not in the cards to play on Monday night. They didn't put him on IR like they did with Bateman and Miles Boykin. So, you know, I don't want to completely dismiss it, but it seems very unlikely at this point. And if we can recall past matchups, not with the Raiders specifically, because that's before Waller kind of became the player he is now, but, you know, these matchups where it's been a Travis Kelce or a Kittle or someone, you know, those elite matchup nightmares at the tight end position, oftentimes what you've seen is the Ravens have used Jimmy Smith as kind of that hybrid safety, kind of matching up against a tight end because he's got that size, right? 6'2". If he's not out there, you know, what does that look like? Do we see the Ravens go with a little more Anthony Averett on the outside and maybe move Marlon Humphrey into the slot? Presumably that, because that's where Waller is going to be much more because of Humphrey's physicality and knowing that he can kind of match up there a little bit more.
Well, you want him to take the ball away. You know what I mean? The ball goes up 8-10 times to Waller. You might come down with it once or twice.
Right. So that's where I think, you know, as much as we've just worked under this assumption that, okay, Tavon Young's back, so Marlon Humphrey's just going to go back to the outside, right? Which is where he's, you know, he's best suited to play out there. I mean, he's an elite outside corner. but he's had to play a lot of nickel the last couple of years, and he's played that at an incredibly high level as well. So I think with this matchup, when you do have a tight end like Waller, who's going to, you know, he's going to line up in the slot, he's going to do lots of different things, they're going to move him around. But that's where you do look at it and say, okay, I don't think Tavon Young's the matchup there. You know, I mean, Tavon Young's a smaller, you know, he's an undersized slot corner. Even if he's fully healthy and back to being the player he was pre-injury, he's just not that physical matchup. So with no Jimmy Smith out there, you know, is it Humphrey lining up inside a little bit more, and he's kind of traveling with Darren Waller, at least for part of the night? You know, the other name to throw out there, which would be, it would show some major confidence in him, would be look out for Brandon Stevens, a third round rookie, who I think when the Ravens go dime, especially with Jimmy Smith not out there at the moment, he's the guy you could see
next man up,
right? Using as a little bit of a chess piece. Now, that might not necessarily be him as a dime that's covering directly. It could be that, you know, Chuck Clark or Deshaun Elliott move into that role, and then he's playing more of a, you know, a high safety look. So it'll be interesting. I think he's someone that they really like. I know I recently asked Wink Martindale about him. And, you know Wink. I mean, he has a way he likes to do things, and he's talked about this a lot. He's compared defense in the NFL to the NBA in the sense that you don't have these traditional positions anymore. I mean, yeah, we still call them those things, but you know, Marlon Humphrey, we just said it. He hasn't been an exclusive outside corner. He's played a ton in the nickel and moving inside. So you know, I think Brandon Stevens is a guy that, you know, I'm not going to predict that he's covering, he's covering Darren Waller on every play, but I think he could be part of that, you know, multifaceted solution there. So, but that's, you know, that's a big one. I mean, you know, I'm not going to say the Raiders don't have any talent at wide receiver. I mean, you know, I mean, Henry Ruggs is fast. We know that. And, you know, they old friend Willie Snead, Hunter Renfro, and different guys like that. But these aren't guys that are scaring you, right? I mean, especially with the Ravens secondary, they are not scaring you. They're not those matchup nightmare types. The guy that can present the major problem is Darren Waller. So that's where, you know, that's going to be the big question over the course of the week. And, you know, the Ravens.
And then there's getting after the quarterback, right?
Yeah. I mean, of course. Right. I mean, that's always talked about.
Sure. You know, you mentioned Judon. Took me a couple of minutes to figure out where he went. You know, I'm like, yeah, he's gone. Who's where? You gave him money. Yeah.
The Patriots. Know. Yeah.
Yeah. Uncle Bill. So. Yeah. You know, and they're not what they used to be, by the way, but this is a week where you figure out numbers and where guys are and all that. And you start to think about these matchups and you say, all right, how are we going to lose? How are we going to win? And, oh, you know, who's going to catch the ball? I asked you that in the last segment. Now, who's going to rush the quarterback? Same question we ask in January, February, March, leading up to the draft. We still have these question marks on Monday night. I guess we'll find out, right? Whether it's Tyus Bowser getting loose or who's going to be, right?
Well, and I think that question's still there. And I don't want to sit here and say that I think this is going to be a fantastic group of outside linebackers. But I do look at how we've talked about this for the better part of 2 or 3 years now, right? I mean, some of the names have changed, but we've still talked about it. We know they're going to blitz a lot. We know they're going to play a lot of games with their defensive linemen with stunts and setting the guy up to be a free rusher. I mean, that's what Wink does. And it's been wildly successful against basically everyone not named the Kansas City Chiefs, right? I mean, it's been good enough. You know, even going up against other top-tier offenses, they've had success and they've been able to get stops. But you know, I think it will be interesting. One, Tyus Bowser, he's not a backup anymore. He's the guy at the Sam linebacker spot. That doesn't mean he's going to play 100% of the snaps, but he's going to play a much higher share of the snaps. Now, you look at some of his metrics last year, had a pretty decent pressure rate, had a nice number of quarterback hits relative to how much he was actually rushing the passer. However, what does that expanded workload look like? Does that augment that? Or do you see a guy that gets a little more tired and maybe it's not quite as effective? He's going to be at the Sam, at the rush spot. You still have Pernell McPhee. Justin Houston's going to factor in there as a pass rush specialist. Owe is going to be on the field. I think his snap count will increase as the year goes on, but they're certainly going to get him out there. And then, you know, I think the big question for me, maybe not big question, that'd be overstating it, but a question that I have is that backup Sam spot. You know, I mean, Bowser, that guy who can drop in the coverage and do different things for you, set a nice edge. Who's that backup? It looks on paper, it's Dalen Hayes, you know, the fifth round pick from Notre Dame, who had a pretty nice camp. But how does that translate if you're asking him to, I don't know, 10 snaps, 12 snaps, you know, a couple series. I mean, Bowser's going to be on the field most of the time, but you do need to spell him. And Wink likes to play five outside linebackers. I didn't even mention Jalen Ferguson, who I'm guessing, looking at the pecking order, probably a healthy scratch right now because he doesn't play special teams. And you're not going to have six outside linebackers, especially if it's a guy who doesn't play teams. So you know, kind of talking about those first five that I mentioned, yeah, plenty of Bowser, plenty of Justin Houston, of course. I think it'll be interesting to kind of see where's McPhee at from a snap count standpoint. Of course, they brought him back after doing their little roster gymnastics last week. You know, where's his snap count at now at age 32 compared to working Owe into that equation? And of course, they want Owe to be on the field and they want him to learn, and they feel good about him setting the edge. You know, that's something that will help his cause getting on the field sooner than later compared to a lot of young guys. But it will be interesting to see how that looks from a rotation standpoint, how that looks over the course of a game, who's playing in the fourth quarter if it's a one score game and you need to get a stop. So I think you have a good group of candidates there. I feel much better about that group than I did before the draft, you know, knowing that, you know, Judon's gone and Ngakoue's gone and Jihad Ward's gone. And, you know, they didn't sign any pass rushers at that point, but, you know, they draft the two kids and then you bring in Justin Houston.
Well, you did get to see them run around a little bit the last couple of weeks, right?
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, they flash, but again, flashing against backups and third team guys is not the same thing as showing up against starters. And that doesn't mean they won't. Let's be clear about that. But there's just so much unknown. And you talked about this just in a general sense. And John Harbaugh even talked about this on Monday. You know, the biggest thing about week one is there's just so much unknown. I mean, we think of all the week one stories, guys who end up being way better than they were the year before, or in some cases, that veteran player who kind of looks like a shell of what he was in previous years. I mean, you know, there's some of that as well. You know, there's going to be some injuries. You hope there's nothing catastrophic. I mean, they've already dealt with some catastrophic injuries, but there's just, you know, there is that unknown and those teams that no one's talking about right now. I mean, I mentioned in our previous conversation, I mean, the Raiders being that team with, you know, Gruden and Mayock now, they're deep enough into that regime where it's time to start seeing some results there. Right. I mean, especially in a new city. I mean, I don't think Las Vegas is going to be patient with the Raiders just being, you know, 7-10 or 8-9 every year. So there's an urgency there. So whether it's a team like that, whether it's a team that no one's talking about whatsoever right now, or we've seen this go the other way too, where that team that there were high expectations for and it doesn't work out, or that team that's you're used to seeing be at a certain level and they're not that anymore. A lot of people have predicted the Pittsburgh Steelers to be a team like that, where, you know, you just kind of expect Mike Tomlin to roll out of bed and the Steelers are at least a 10 win team. And there are a lot of people that think they're not going to be that anymore this year. I don't know. But
that's what makes it fun. The Redskins suck, I'll consider it a win.
Right. There you go. There you go. Throw the Cowboys in there too. Why not?
Yeah,
so,
why not? But
that's what makes week one so fun. I mean, we can all recall some of the weirdest. I mean, think that I so fondly remember the 2008 Ravens. I mean, John Harbaugh's first game, all the weirdness with Troy Smith, with the tonsil infection, and Joe Flacco, who wasn't supposed to start the year. Suddenly he's starting the year and we see him take off and run for a 35-yard touchdown against the Bengals that day. And, you know, we were wondering if the Ravens were going to win four games that year and they end up going to the AFC Championship. So you have those stories, but you also have those teams that have high expectations. And for whatever reason, whether it's a blind spot on the roster you were kind of overlooking, or a rash of injuries, you know, it doesn't work out that way sometimes as well. So that's why they play the games, right? You know, guys like you and me can fancy ourselves that, you know, we know a little bit about football, but there's just so much unknown going into this, including for the coaches. You know, these coaches in front offices can, you know, lay the best plans out there, and we know that in many cases around the league, it's going to blow up in their face, and guys will lose their jobs as a result even. I mean, that's just the nature of the beast, but it's why the NFL is as popular as it is, that 17-week, now 18-week soap opera in the regular season, trying to figure out what this is going to look like every Sunday.
Dude, every time you say 7-10 or 10-7,
it's weird, right?
And you're 9-8. It's really, really weird. I'm looking, man. It's exciting. First week, your Eagles are going to lose in Atlanta. Chargers are going to go beat the Redskins down in D.C. Steelers are going to spit up all over themselves up in Buffalo. We get all sorts of things happening here, right? But one thing for sure, we're last on the docket. We get to watch everybody else play first, which is, you know, that's kind of fun unto itself, I think.
Yeah, well, you just mentioned Pittsburgh and Cleveland. Look at their week one task compared to what the Ravens have to do, the opponents they're going up against. I mean, the Ravens are in a position where they could be looking at the rest of the division being 0-1 going into Monday Night Football and having a chance to, right off the bat, have a lead in the AFC North. Not that it's over. I mean, it's 1 week, but hey, you look at this, this is an opportunity. And when the schedule came out, I vividly remember us talking about this back in May. You look at the first half of the schedule compared to the second half of the schedule. I said at that point, and I still feel that way, and that's why all this offensive uncertainty is really unsettling. I think this is a team at the bye week. If they have more than a loss or two at that point, and you look at the second half of this schedule, and we never know. I mean, there are teams that are going to fall back and teams that are better than we're thinking they're going to be right now. But you look at the second half of the schedule with, you know, a Thursday night trip at Miami, the Chicago Bears, who knows what their quarterback situation is going to be. I'm guessing Andy Dalton's not going to be their starter at that point. We're going to be seeing a young, exciting, Fields running around and doing Lamar Jackson like things. So that's interesting. But then Cleveland at Pittsburgh, at Cleveland, Green Bay at Cincinnati. I mean, the Bengals could be much better come week 16. And then the closing out with the Rams and the Steelers at home. That's quite a gauntlet there of games, and not to say they can't win most of those games, but if you're in a position where you're limping into the bye week and you're only a game over 500 or somewhere in that territory, then it's going to be a heck of a grind the second half of the year. That's why you look at this first month, and yeah, it's three road games. I get that, and you never want to take a road game for granted in the NFL, but at Las Vegas, home against Kansas City, we know that's going to be a tough game. It's going to be a huge game for both sides. And then at Detroit, at Denver, better make some hay there. You better win some road games there, because if you stub your toe and you're 2-2 coming out of that opening month of the season, then the mojo is not feeling any better than it does right now with everything we've talked about with their issues on the offensive side of the ball.
My mojo is feeling some tacos and beer Sunday night in Las Vegas. Luke's going to be around all week out in Owings Mills. I will be in Owings Mills on Thursday as well. Don't forget Friday, the Maryland Crab Cake Tour comes to Highland Town, hon. We're going to be at the Chaucer from 2 until 5 on Friday. Just talking to friends, having a beer, having a crab cake. No pressure, just fun. I'll be telling the stories about my music lessons up at Jaeger's Music House and the weird wild art and statues in Hausner's. So we'll have some old Stella's stories and Epstein's up there in Highland Town. So come on out, come one, come all, 2 p.m. to 5 p.m. at the Chaucer in Highland Town. Be up on the second floor having the crab cake there. Hope to see everybody there. You can find Luke Baltimore Luke out on the Twitter thing, the Facebook thing, all social media. You can find me here all week long, as well as with Governor Hogan last week. All the Maryland and Crab Cake Tour videos now up as well. From throughout the tour, I will be recapping various days of the tour with many, many guests, new people that I met driving all over the state, and Dennis's blue Bronco a couple weeks ago as well. I am Nestor. We are WNST, AM 1570 Towson, Baltimore. We never stop talking Ravens football in Baltimore. Positive.